So we had a discussion, as we always do when during setup. This is one of the nice things about going to setup, doing setup, about the do as I do. And Marion has been reading the Fukasa book, right?
Yes.
And they indicate in that that you should, the dog already should know some of the behavior, some behaviors very well, and that you do what now? You say whatever it is you want them to say. You're going to teach them to jump up on a table. You say table first, and then you do it.
Well, no. First, you just make sure they can table without a hand cue of any kind.
Right.
Just a verbal cue. Then you tell them sit, stay. You go walk, get on the table. You come back to the dog. You say do it, and then table. So
what she's doing is she wants some groundwork first, essentially. So she wants dogs that will do something without a cue first, and then you start teaching more things, and then the dog starts getting the idea that this, when you say something, it's going to mean what they're going to do. And what I think that's a very fine way to teach. I have no problem with that at all, except for I don't think you need to do that if you don't want to. So one of the things about learning theory is that it's a theory, which means that however your dog learns, if it's successful, then you've just done a good job, right? It doesn't matter whether you got to it in the prescribed manner. There are a lot of people, particularly right now, but probably in the past as well, who say, well, you have to do it my way, if my way or the highway kind of thing. And I think that that is so restrictive on those of us who might have a different way of doing something. So one of the things that John Rogerson, who is definitely a superb trainer, said years and years ago was something along the lines of, if you figure out a way to do it, then do it. Right? And he was right. And this was in like 1992. He came to Marin Humane Society. And at that time, he was talking about how to teach dogs to go over jumps. And so I guess I can't remember what the way that we did it then, but what he did is he said, he saw the jump and the dog, and he says, okay, you want the dog to go over that jump, right? And yes, I want the dog to go over that jump. So one of the things you can do is make not going over the jump impossible. And the best way to do that is maybe to have a person who is not the owner hold the dog, and the person who is the owner go to the other side. He didn't do as I do. He didn't walk over it. He went around it, but it doesn't matter. And then call the dog, and if the dog wants to go any other way, which they always do, because dogs don't want to go over jumps unless there's no other alternative, they know how to conserve energy, right? Then you only let them go over the jump. And at the time, this was in the day of really compulsive training, and so this was unheard of, that you actually said, okay, what does the dog have to learn? What is the easiest way for the dog to learn it, and let's go for it. And about nose works, what John said, and I thought it was really good, is that nose works, I don't know if you guys know where nose works came from. Anybody know where the... Okay, so it was, there's these two women. I knew one of them and not the other one. And they're down in Southern California, and they both did search and rescue, which is a cool thing to do. But search and rescue takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and you have to really immerse yourself in it in order to do it properly. And so what they did is they took the search and rescue and took the rescue part out of it. So there's no, you don't go to a person to save the person. You just do essentially scent something and find it. That's what the idea is for the dog, is that they just learn to discriminate between scents. So I have a good friend who teaches what she calls the ultimate scenting, which is go find my keys, right? Which is a really good one, It could be a find my phone, canine style, right? And so so they had worked out their way of teaching this particular method of training. And the way they do it is they start off with boxes. How many of you guys have done some, a little, even just a little? If you haven't, I'll just go through it. It's really quick. You take like four, maybe six boxes, and the boxes are like that big. And they can be, essentially any boxes. They don't have to match each other. And you put treats in one of them. And they do actually some observational learning here, because you put treats in one of them, and when you're doing that, you kind of go, right? Because you're actually showing them that you're putting a treat in there. And then you take all of the boxes and you put them all around a, you know, a training facility someplace. And then you kind of let the dog go. And the dog finds a treat. And when it finds it, when it finds a bag of treats or whatever is in there, you go over to the box. This is all simplified, obviously. Go over to the box, throw a party for the dog, give the dog a treat. So they start to learn that there is going to be a treat in one of the boxes. It's just going to be in one of the boxes. And you have to use the same box for the treats every time, because otherwise they will all start smelling like treats, and then it won't be fair to the dog. Because if you put it in different boxes, then the dog is going to smell the treats in each of the boxes. It gets really fun when you have like the box up on top of a table or something, and the dog has to actually follow the air movement to get it. And so they'll go over to like right down here, then you watch their nose go up and around and in. So it really uses their brain, it really uses that big part of their olfactory lobe. It's a wonderful thing.
So the box is open on the top?
The box is just open.
Oh, so they can go in and
get it. And get it. The idea, I think, is that this is just a container, right? For the treat bag or whatever it might be. Then after a while, what they do is associate a treat with a particular scent. So you would have a cotton swab with a little bit of hickory or a little bit of anise on it, and you put a treat right beside that, so they will go for the scent of the hickory instead of the treat, and then they get a treat anyway, and then you take away the treat. This is all a process that you're going through. So John Rogerson goes, well, why have boxes? Why do this stuff? What are you talking about? Why do you need to go through this process? Well, it was because that was the process that they did. And that is the process. If you want to be a NoseWorks instructor and you want to get certified by them, you have to go through this process. And so what he did is he just started hiding treats. And then after they learned to hide treats, he'd put the scent next to the treat. And then they got the scent after that. So he cut out a whole bunch of that beginning part. And that's kind of what I do when I'm helping my clients, because we do a lot of kind of very, very low-level scenting stuff, which really mostly what that involves is just I want to get their brains working. You know, it's not that they're going to go to competition, although some of them have gone on and are now competing, which is good. And one of them... Two of them became instructors, which is also great. And they had to go through certification, which is apparently not a lot of fun. But anyway, but it's probably worth it in the end, because there's all these competitions now, and you can do all kinds of stuff. So I guess the point of my story is that if you find a shortcut, if you find a way to do something, and it's not the prescribed way, but it gets what you want to have happen, and the dog is happy in the process, so you are getting a good kind of soft feeling between the two of you, the dog and you, then go for it. Then absolutely go for it. And so with regard to do as I do, you know, personally what I would do is I would attach the name to the cue, say it's table, just for the heck of it, after the dog has done it reliably 5 or 6 times. That I've said do it, and then they go on the table. And then the 7th time, I might go table right as the dog is getting to the table. So I'm actually attaching the cue to the behavior. So that's how I would probably do it. I don't think that Claudia's way is wrong, and I don't think my way is wrong. I think they can both be quite right. That makes sense? So, you know, I think one of the worst things that can happen these days is people get into this thing about, well, I have to do it this way. Bats like that too. Grisha now, you know, she certifies people in BAT. And BAT is a really worthwhile, wonderful thing. But it's not something that you only have to do one way. You can do it a myriad of different ways. And if they work, do it. Yeah, you're not going to get certified, but if you've got a dog that you're working on and it works, then I don't see any reason why you shouldn't do that. It's just my personal feeling. I started getting really upset about the NoseWorks things when I was at Marine Humane Society, because I thought, oh my God, here we are really trying to help these dogs and we're doing scenting, and they're telling us that we can't do it unless we do it their prescribed fashion. So I got upset, and then I just thought, well, the hell with them. They're not my boss. They're not the boss of me. And so we kept on doing it the way we wanted to do it. And then some of the folks went into the Real Nose Works, and I think that's just great. No problem with it at all. Okay, so here's some do as I do. This is, you want to tell us a little bit about your dog? Because, boy.
Which one?
I did both dogs. I put them both in there. So you have two dogs, right?
Yeah, I have two dogs. Alabama, she's my older dog, who actually really likes learning. But anyways, she's...
How old is she?
She'll be 9 coming up soon. So we can teach you all new tricks. But yeah, she got it. I did have to kind of work my way up to her coming back. She would jump up on the couch and I would say yes for that first, and then
so you actually did some shaping along the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because at first I tried the touch thing first last week and she was just like, I don't know what you're doing. So after watching the other two, you said to start with things that they're familiar with, and you know, we didn't do a whole lot of touch work with her. So I just, she loves the couch, so let's start on that. And then we did the whole around the table and the stairs. My other dog, though, knows he's not allowed on the stairs, so I don't know if it's on there.
On the stairs or on the couch?
He's not allowed on the stairs.
Do you have cats?
I have to keep them separate.
Ah.
So he knows that that's where she goes, and so it's just funny to see him sit there and be like, I know I'm not supposed to go on there. But, yeah. So these are my dogs.
Okay.
I do cheat because I point, but...
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that's cheating. Okay. I think that that's helping.
Helps, yeah. It's nice.
Everything that I was talking about is in that. You know, that's helping.
Okay.
And if it ends up helping and the dog gets what you want the dog to have and you're happy, is there a reason to worry about that? And I don't think there is.
My younger one.
Watch.
Okay, so this is the younger one.
Yes. And I do it twice because we kind of...
Watch. I love how we have all these videos with our heads cut off. I think doing it twice, 3 times, 4 times is great.
There it goes!
How about that?
He's so good. He looks so.
Yes, good boy.
And you can see him thinking there, right?
Stay. Watch.
Okay, so he's the one who's not allowed upstairs. What are you doing? No. No.
The first time we tried it, he would start running down the hall.
Yeah.
This is Alabama.
This is Alabama.
The things we do to our couch.
Yes!
Look
at one
girl. Very,
very, very cheerful. You really do get great attention from your dog.
Girl.
So the next time you did it, you would probably try not to point.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Watch. Go. Yes.
But that
girl
dog absolutely knew, didn't he?
Yeah.
She? She?
Alabama, that's
the girl. Did the dogs, this is actually a good question, did the dogs know what they were doing? Yeah. So they look like they're going, oh, well, she wants us to do that. So then you take that and you go, okay, that's our beginning. And after a while, what will happen is the dog will just watch your body. Now, the other thing is how wonderful the dogs were, even though you were doing something that probably 99% of us does. You had your hand in your bait bag.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Yeah,
that's...
Problem doing that.
Yes, it is so common. Put the treat bag behind your back.
If you notice on one of them, I remembered and I took my hand out of it.
Yeah.
Walking around the
we let this hand just rest. Aspen, you got a bully stick and it's still over there.
It's not gone,
so that's it. No,
it's not gone. She's got little bitty weak teeth. You know.
Well, I didn't want to bring her two bully sticks.
When Luke gets a bully stick, he gets one this long. And the others all get one that's this long. And he finishes his first, and then he'll come over and go, have no bully stick. No one gave me a bully stick. We even have a video of him. I have to see if I can find it. It's very funny because he's looking at the bully stick. I don't know if it's here. But because it's really cute.
Are you talking about?
No, it isn't.
What he
does is he sees Boo, our Aussie, with a bully stick, but he's already finished his. And he comes up to Trisha and he goes, and then he looks over at Boo. And he comes back and goes, and then looks over, and Trisha's going, "I'm sorry, you ate yours already." It's very cute. It's on my other thing. Okay. So we're going to talk about punishment, but before we do that, I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe training something that you wanted to train, and what I thought the hardest thing for dogs to learn to do is to walk politely on leash, which is why we have so many pieces of equipment for that. Is because of that. So, does anybody have a method that they think of as being extremely successful? Or moderately successful? Yes?
I always found, especially, that if they're pulling and pulling, I turn around and I just walk.
So you actually turn around and make a U-turn and go the other way.
And keep walking the other way until they behave. Then I turn around. And usually I get some resistance, like, "No, we've been that way. I don't want to go that way." And then it's like, okay. And sometimes it is taken, but I mean, I don't just turn around. I walk up to see how they perform. And it did help.
Yeah. Well, it should. That's certainly, because they want to go somewhere, right? And so if you're telling them, "No, you're not going to go where I want you to," then that's part of, you know.
I mean, that was the most successful one with this
okay.
dog that I
had.
Okay,
that's a perfectly wonderful thing to use.
I didn't do that with.
Yeah.
I just stopped dead in my tracks. I use the Freedom Harness, which has, like, saved my life. It didn't matter, I mean, I have an 8-year-old left, it didn't matter how much I tried to train him to be right by my side. When he wanted to go, it was like, "We're on our way to the park and we're going there." So I just stopped dead in my tracks and wait for him to pause, take a step back and look at me, and then we keep going. So I made him kind of redirect his attention to me before we keep going. And it, without fail, anytime I take him out, still, like I said, he's 8, the first block is that still.
Oh, I've always said dogs should not go in the first half of their walk. Skip that entirely, just go on the second half. Yeah.
Just let me know when you're ready to walk with me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I tried the stop going in a U-turn, and what happened is after a bit, when Bowden would pull and I would just get a little bit back and say, "No pull," he would just on his own do the U-turn, and then he would just keep going forward. So I said, "Okay, so this is not working."
Okay, so what's going on with that? What do you think? Why do you think it's not working?
Think
you.
Oh.
You're being too consistent.
Oh.
Isn't that funny to think about? But that if you are, this is one area with polite walking, where if you are really consistent, the dog will learn what your tells are, and they'll learn what they do to get their own way. So, you know, so if you're walking like this you stop and they go, "Okay, here we are, all right, now I'm gonna," you know, then that means that the dog already knows what's going to happen and they don't really feel that they're supposed to go with you. What they feel is that, you know, they want to get what they want and this is their way to do it. So you need to be in doing behavior modification, in doing loose leash walking, it's important to have at least 2 or 3 different techniques easily at hand so that you can shift them in order to have the dog do what you want the dog to do. Yeah?
Sometimes what I do is sort of what you're saying, but I'll walk a few feet turn around, then go right, then go left, go slow. Go
so you
fast.
Do a little dance.
Yeah. I mean, not just in, you know, more than a few feet, but not mm-hmm. long. So they're having to pay attention.
Okay.
All the time. Doesn't always work.
Nothing always works. I mean, nothing always works. Yes.
I think the thing that has worked best for Beau, because he's actually doing some light walking, I would say a good 60-65% of the time now when we go on a walk, is I use the halty pedicle. And he doesn't like that thing over his nose, but after a few attempts to wipe it off, then he stops and we go on. And he does, as you say, at the beginning of the walk, he's just raring to go, so he pulls a little bit. But probably midway through, he just starts walking either at my side or up where the leash is still loose. And then what I'm doing is switching. He's also wearing his rep warmers. So what I try to do is when he's walking nicely, I'll switch to the harness on the front latching piece and see how he does. If he pulls too much, then I switch.
Then you switch back. So you're actually giving him a reward for doing what you wish him to do. And that's perfectly great, yeah. And a lot of times dogs require some extra help in that very first part of the walk when they're so excited, and particularly adolescent dogs. But after a while, what he'll be able to do is get off of that gentle leader, which he doesn't like, or the halter, which he doesn't like, and onto his harness, which he probably doesn't mind, and he'll be good. Yeah, so that's good.
So I walk this big 70-pound, super strong pit American Bulldog mix, and she is very, like, no impulse control, especially with water. And so I did the turnaround. We have been walking her since last summer, I think. And then I also tried just stopping, and she would just lurch for it. She would loosen it. And so what I did was I just every time she pulled, I just stopped and I waited. So the first couple days, it was like at least 15 minutes of just standing there, and she gets hyper focused on things. So she's not paying any attention. So I just waited. And I think the first time I did it, we only went like 3 blocks on a walk in an hour. And then she figured it out. A couple days, she was like, oh, you could just see, you just knew. Then what I did was I made her look at me for at least a couple seconds. So she just blinked and went back. I just waited. And I was really, really patient because enough to go anywhere. And she will, as soon as it starts getting tight, she just sits. If there's a puddle, it's a little harder. So what I started doing was pre-mapping her for the puddle.
You mean so she wants the puddle or wants to avoid the puddle?
She wants to just go crazy.
Okay, she's got the bully water thing.
She does. So what I do with that is I make her sit and watch me. And if it's a puddle that hasn't been there that we haven't seen in forever, if it's like clean on the sidewalk, then I let her, because her parents don't care at all. They're right, it's totally fine. They just adore this dog. She can do whatever. That's why she wasn't good on leash. Then she gets to bounce in the puddle as long as, because what happens is if I'm not prepared, I get pulled over because she's so big, and I got my ankle twisted one day. So that worked super well for her. Like, it was great. It just required a ton of patience. And then what I did was, because she's a little growly with people. She's never bitten anyone, but she has jumped at people. I conditioned her to look at my hand when I have treats in my hand. So if I say, right here, I put my hand up, and she has a cue, she snaps her head up at my hand, and we just walk past the people, and she gets a treat. So the wife just said, oh my God, she is just phenomenally better.
So what you get is an A, or maybe a P for patience.
Oh man.
Because how many of you guys think you would do the 15 minutes of just hanging there waiting?
I did it. So
and?
I did it.
And did it work?
Yeah, minus the first 30 minutes or 15 minutes of her walk. Yeah, after that it's great.
Yeah. Minus the first 15
minutes. Well, it's just the eagerness of, oh my God, we're going outside. Like, he's never been outside before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the things you can do for these dogs that are so excited is you can actually, you know, do some hide and seek, to toss some treats so they start looking for the treats for that first, because we want to go, right?
Yeah.
That we want to go, but the dog wants to do all the sniffing in the world.
Yeah.
So if you take some cheese or chicken or something like that and, you know, toss a bunch of it someplace and then just send the dog on to find it, then you actually will work through some of that excitement. Not all of it, but some of it.
That's
That works great for reactive dogs.
Oh, yes, that's perfect. Oh, yeah, that's why I use Find It for reactive dogs.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are I think mostly fairly passive methods, right? So you go, you start to go, the dog keeps going, you stop, you wait, the dog comes back to you, hopefully, and then you go on. I find the worst thing about this with clients is that the dog doesn't come all the way back to them. So what happens is they're going like this, they stop, the dog is stopped up there, looks back at them, and they go like, what? And then they start, because the dog has stopped, the person goes again. So they don't do a full reset. And if you use this method, you have to do a full reset. The dog has to come back over, sit right next to you, get ready to go again. And then you go, so that the dog starts to understand that if I'm up here, that is not good. If I am here, it is good. But I would say 2/3 of my clients who use this method don't do that. Yeah, you see that if you're in classes or something like that. So is it a good method? For some dogs, it's great. For other dogs, they'll lie down. What do you do for a balking dog, which we will talk about in a minute? You know, a dog that stops behind you? That's always a fun thing to talk about, because there are dogs that just kind of go, I'm not going on a walk. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here. And that's that. So, but it's for another moment. So, you know, there's that's a behavior modification method. There are other kind of games. So for instance, the way I do that one is I would go up, they stop. So instead of stopping and standing, I start moving backwards. Kind of doing a little bit of what you do. You're doing a U-turn and you're doing it. I start moving backwards. The reason I might move backwards is it gives, this is like, why does this work? You know, because it was working for me and I'm like, well, how come it's working for me? What I think is working for me is I give them a target. So they're walking like this, they stop, I go, bring them back, they keep on coming back to here. Now they've got me as a target. You're gonna follow me. That's why attention walking works really well. Attention walking essentially is that. It's going to be, the dog is here in front of you, where people want to have the dog anyway, and you just keep on walking backwards and the dog will follow you because you're that target. And then after they followed you for a little while, what happens is you stop, move slightly into them, pushing them over to the side, so you're using some pressure, push them over to the side, and then move forward. And as soon as they go forward again, get up here, you move backwards again. It's a lovely method. I think it was Leslie Nelson first introduced it, and I think it's a really nice method because it's very soft. It's also just really, hey, Aspen, you want to do it? No. What if I gave you cheese? What if I gave you cheese? Well, okay. Maybe I will. You want to? Aspen, come here. I don't have a leash. It's in the car. But come here, puppy. Here. Aspen, come. Oh, I don't trust you. Here, Aspen, find it. Find it. It's on the ground. Good. So it's kind of, you've got a big dog that's pulling, right? Not a little dog that doesn't pull. And so you've got a treat. So you use a lure, back like this, and then right around like this, and then you move forward, sit, and treat. Okay, so you're actually
not to against them.
You actually, well, I didn't have to with her. But okay. It, as you're pulling, I mean, as you're kind of luring her back, ready? This way, this way, this way. And now if you need to, you push into her, see how she comes over to the side, and moves her over to the side, and sit. So you can use a lure. This is a beginning method, for sure. It's with one of your... the dog that doesn't know very much at all. It's great for shelter dogs.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, it's really good for shelter dogs.
No tension on the leash, though.
Yeah, you're trying very hard. What you're trying to do is teach the dog how to walk on leash without any tension ever. That's the idea. And it doesn't want that, of course. I mean, that's your goal. Okay. The other thing you can do is you can, let's back it up a little bit. You can do it like this.
You ready? Yeah, I know. Let's go. And now you're walking, and now you just turn yourself. Okay, and then you turn yourself and put her to the side. So that actually is, particularly if you don't know where you're going and whether you're going to bump into somebody, then you end up kind of with this. Let's go. Let's go back. And now we have a dance going. Mm-hmm. And of course but this is what I did with her. I taught her to follow me. So what a nice method that is for targeting. Yeah? Because now I know they're supposed to target your leg. Kind of cool thing. Now whether Bowden will be targeting your waist, right? Because he's big.
He's big.
But the fact is you're using yourself as a movable target.
The other thing he does that's really odd is when we're walking sometimes he likes to go sniff and he'll be right behind me and he's starting to bash into the back of my knees.
Oh. Yeah, he probably doesn't have a lot of body awareness. So what do you usually do?
If I keep walking, he keeps doing it, so I stop.
Okay, stop, push into him.
Okay.
Push back. You can go, ow! And push back into him. Because he doesn't have any, a student of mine in France has that problem with her big dog. And she just wrote to me about it today. And it is, the dog is being rude. And if you go to dog parks, you will see these dogs being rude, you know, because they're going smashing into people. One of the best ways to stop that behavior, going away from polite walking for a minute, is when you're doing a recall, so you're calling the dog to you. Hey, Aspen, you ready to do a little bit more? Come here. She says, I'm tired now. It's been so hard. So if I were going to call her... Wait. So if I were going to call her, presumably, you know, she's a big dog, which she's not, then when she starts getting close to me, I'm actually going to go towards her and put physical pressure on her. I'm going to actually kind of do a little bit of looming. And that teaches dogs to be more body aware. So it's asking, pop, and just backs them right up. Good girl. Go out. All the way. Come. Okay. So when you do it, you're going. It's not like that at all. It's a full body movement with the whole body like this, and you kind of and it teaches the dog to back up a bit. You want them to come to you. You want to be going, yay! You're a good dog for coming, but at the same time, if they go smashing into you, or they do flybys, which is a really common thing, you really want them to teach to come in here. Right, and then just to give a little bit of space to you. So that's a nice thing to do. Now, another way, I'm trying to think of a way for you to not stand up and have to hold this darn thing. Can we stop for a second? So yes.
Okay, one question. Tater is like if she's at the dog park, and I come, she sees me. She comes running full force.
Tater is a bully.
Bulldog, probably pit. I don't know.
I actually think she's like a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
She's solid, but she has knocked other people down. But I prepare myself, and then I tell her, slow down, or nothing really works well. But I don't want her jumping on me. Because that's when she does it,
Yeah, so, do you have access to Tater very often?
Not as much now.
Okay, because if you have access to the dog, then you can start teaching them using this recall. And you can make it very tiny. The recall can be just a little comfort. So it's like, Aspen, go out there. Oh, actually, that's not what I wanted to do. Aspen, yes. Let's go. Come! And then again.
Yeah.
Okay, just a little, it doesn't have to be a great big come. And then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. So, and then what happens is they start seeing that. What they see, right? They see very, very specific. So when they see that, they back up. So, and you can teach a bully to do that. It is just about 14,000 times harder than it is to teach like a
border
collie or a German Shepherd.
One day to try to do it.
Yeah.
You know? I think she's done this post.
She's not done. She's just probably very, very...
20 times, but I'd say she has a good focus, but then I'd say do it. Well, then she thought I'm throwing the treat, so she's
okay, so in this case, you probably don't want to be pointing.
Right.
You want to just have to do it.
But I mean, it was just real funny, and I thought,
yeah. It takes dogs, in order to do this stuff, they have to learn to learn. They have to learn to love to learn. If they think that it's otherwise it's very confusing. So rather than assuming stupidity, assume confusion.
Yeah.
You got to clarify it somehow. Yeah.
I use that method all the time with shelter boys. Just the little pressure forward.
Little pressure forward.
For most of them, it works real good.
Yes, there are going to be some that it doesn't. The ones that climb up you and all that kind of stuff. So there definitely won't be. But for a lot of them, there are. She's following you, Maribel. Or at least she was. She's like, somebody probably has something for me to do. I know that. Aren't I on now? Isn't this what I do? So that little method is a really nice method. I was telling these guys earlier that when I was my first dogs as an adult were German Shepherds, and all the training was compulsive. So you actually were presented with the choke chain and your 6-foot leather leash, and they said, now your dog is old enough to learn what's right. And then you started punishing them right then at 6 months. You never started training your dog until they were 6 months. This is one of the reasons why they wanted them to be 6 months old, is because they can't handle that kind of training until they are. And many of them can't handle it after they are. But I had these big dogs, and so, you know, I trained them like that, and they were good and all that kind of stuff. And then I got Cairn Terriers. Well, Cairn Terriers are terriers. So that means that they have absolutely no reason, they don't think there's any reason to please you. They're in it for themselves, i.e. Tater. Okay? They're terriers. Terriers are, I mean, the bigger ones that are more geared at pleasing their owner, but a lot of, particularly terriers, like Cairns and Jacks and all that, they're really in it for themselves. And I saw one of my clients this week was a Jack Russell Terrier. And I said, and he's adorable. But he does what Jack Russell Terriers do. He goes boing, de boing, de boing. And he's so focused not on his ball, he's focused on a stuffed toy. And you cannot get it. He's like, oh my God, this is so wonderful, this is wonderful. This is the dog that is, you know, there was a movie. I can't remember what the Jack Russell Terrier is going, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. And that's what this dog is. And I told the client, I said, you knew that you got a Jack Russell Terrier, right? You know that this is a different kind of dog and it's totally selfish. And so we've got to figure out ways that he thinks that you're doing stuff for him instead of him doing stuff for you. And I'm just rewatching Frasier. And, you know, that dog was a shelter dog that had been given up because he was so problematic. And what it was is he was so smart. And he figured out everything, you know. So, but with Cairn Terriers, using a choke chain on a Cairn Terrier, Aspen, that's enough. I know she has lots of stuff usually, but she doesn't right now. She has no problem with direct eye contact. So, you know, I was trying to think, well, and people would say, oh, yeah, just put a choke chain on them and start to correct them. Well, if you're going to use corrections at any level, whether you're using it a prong collar or whatever, the correction needs to be at the level of the dog's back. Because if you do it up high, if you pop a dog like this, what are you doing? And I know you don't ever do this, but what do you think you would be doing if you did that? You're choking the dog, right? And you're also trying to tell the dog to do something but you're not telling him what. He can't go up. You know, pulling like this, he can't go up. So if you're going to do a correction is always at the level of the dog's back. So it's always like right there. And I do some of that with, when I'm walking three dogs at once, I do what I call nagging, which is three really short little pop, 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 and they go, oh, what do with you? But you have to do it at the level, well, Cairn Terriers are that big. So put a choke chain on a Cairn Terrier and try to do a correction. You can't. So I'm like, well, how do I do this? And of course, at the time we weren't into positive reinforcement. You didn't do any treats or anything like that. So what I thought was, well, I have to do something at the level of the dog. I'll just use another leash. So I attached, I had a 6 foot leash here, and then I attached like a 6 or 8, 10 foot leash down on the ground and put it on a harness. And I did not have a choke chain. I never used choke chains or anything like that on the Cairns. And then I'd be walking along, and when they went too far ahead, I'd go, oops, and step on the leash. And they go, oh, the ground just got me. I guess that's what it seemed like it was. And then I'd say, come back, and they come back. And we go again, and oops, and then they stop. Worked like a charm. Had great, great Cairn Terriers who never, ever pulled on the leash.
How far ahead were they when you, just as soon as they got back from?
Well, I said oops, and then I tried to find the leash, you know, because then it's like. So it was probably a little further than I actually wanted it to be. But I have to say that if you're going to use that kind of instant pressure on a dog, that having it come from the, having that pressure come from the ground rather than from you is a really good thing to do. Does that make sense? So that's one of the reasons why I said it's so important to not be restrained or constrained by what people say is the right thing to do, when you might have a better idea. I mean, that's what all new training methods are, right? They're a better idea. So, yeah.
So what do you, with the dog that, like, Emmy that came here, she's so anxious, and she's so, and we've been doing the driver, walk away, walk her back. She still gets very, you know, chews the grass and everything, so. And there are times when I feel like she's so focused on just getting through the grass. This is a very anxious Golden. She, I think that she really can't hear very, I think she's just so focused on.
She can't hear you.
She can't hear me. So what do you.
I would probably try the attention walking. See if you can get it, you know, get her to pay attention to you and walk backwards.
Okay.
Just see, and you know, let me know how it's going. Okay, so then the another kind of walking method is called guided walking, and you saw it at the very beginning of class when I was doing it with this little guy here. I'm going to show you a portion of the video that Rogerson produced. This is with a shelter dog. You'll see this, and I just wanted to say that I don't do it quite like this, but this is what. What they do. You don't have to worry. This pops up.
Okay, cool.
You don't have to worry about it.
You want me? Does it have to be plugged in now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. No. That's now completely separate. You don't need to have music. So you can see what he's doing is he lets the dog go pretty far ahead, then he drops his hand down, moves the collar to beneath the dog's chin, and then turns. So can you see why that might be guiding as opposed to pulling up? This is dropping the collar.
Now why do you go down like that?
Because you want to guide the dog. So if say you have a little child, right? You're like this with a little child, and you're pulling up like this, and you turn, where is the child going to go? They're not going to know where to go. So if you think of that holding your hand, you're going to hold it down here. This is one of the most common, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most common problems that we have in polite walking is people operate up here and dogs operate down there. And if you can just get them to keep their hand at or below their waist, things get, and of course, I always tell people with little dogs, that's their own fault. You're gonna have a bad back. Because that, you know, that you have to do stuff down at their level in order for them to feel comfortable doing it. So then watching, he was pretty, I mean, he let them go pretty far. And knowing John, I would assume that that was his thing, because he's into kind of the big stuff. So I make it smaller. I add a lot more positive reinforcement to it. So you can see it with this one. This little guy's got a pinch collar on, but I'm trying really hard not to use it. If people like pinch collars, I'm not going to talk them out of it in the beginning. I'm going to wait until we have good behavior before I say, by the way, I don't think you need this. Okay, so this is, now I drop down, turn around, and I'm going to actually use a find it to keep the dog going in the direction I want the dog to go. And she's doing really well. This is Lola. Down, around. So for her, because she's leash reactive, very leash reactive, horribly leash reactive, just getting her to understand that what I wanted was a really big deal. They just wrote to me and said that they want their mother to walk the dog, and I'm like, I don't think so. Because she's a screaming Mimi type of pity. You know, the ones that kind of go, that, which is really scary for anybody having to walk the dog. Great, great people, though. Yeah?
I had a dog a few years back. She was kind of afraid of people, so we would walk her at night.
You remember the Midnight Walkers Club.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, I walked her with another dog, and then that dog got old and couldn't walk as far. So, and we didn't realize she was as scared of people until we started walking her separately. Working with her, we would do like a 25-foot lead out on a field and kind of do the zigzag and just walk in different directions. And, you know, when she would follow me and come to me, we would treat her. Is that something you would recommend for somebody pulling, or is that more just for anxious?
I think that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, so you would get like a 25-foot leash.
Yeah. Go out on a field somewhere and just kind of walk all over the field.
Yeah.
Every time she came.
I call that choose to follow, and that is that's a wonderful wonderful method. Is the video still going on?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to turn it off?
No, it's fine. As long as you tell me the video is going and it's going, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that choose to follow thing is wonderful. And in a way, guided walking is the small version of that.
It was recommended by a horse trainer.
Yes, that's what they're. But, and when we do a clinic, and we're supposed to be setting up some clinics now, we use it all the time. Because it, among other things, guided walking, you'll discover, and not guided walking, with the choose to follow, you'll discover whether you have a relationship with your dog, if they want to come to you, and then they start to figure out what you want them to do. And that's really nice. Anything you can do without actually using the leash is really nice, because the leash interferes with learning. You know, we wouldn't want to learn on a leash either. So, yes. And the choose to follow with a 30-foot line, you just kind of walk where you want to walk, and then the dog catches up to you, and you tell them they're a good dog, and you give them a treat, but you don't stop.
Yeah.
You just keep going. And the reason you're keeping going is you want to keep their attention. As soon as you stop, they go, oh, what else is going on?
And you treat them where you want them.
Yeah, you can treat them right at the left leg if you want them on the left side, and you treat them on the right leg if you want them on the right side. And remember, the only reason you have the dog on the left side is so you can carry your gun on the right, so don't worry about it too much.
But you don't call them.
You do not call them. You might, in the first few times you're doing it, you know, call them or make little kissy noises or something.
Praise like crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
They come
but you're like going, oh, wow, you're just really good when you're right here.
Now, what if they're out there and they look at you?
Then you keep moving away. See, here's the thing about choose to follow. You don't look at the dog.
Right.
You're not looking at the dog. You're going someplace. It's their job to find you and to catch up to you. And in the end, that's exactly what off-leash walking is, isn't it? Off-leash walking is having a dog that is in the general vicinity, keeps an eye on you, and catches up with you. That's what that is. And amazingly enough, most people tend to not think that, you know, they think, at what point can I let my dog off-leash? 8 weeks. I mean, I never have my dogs on leash. If we have a puppy, they're not on a leash. The leash is something that's added later, you know. I want the dogs to choose to follow me from the time they're puppies. We have some really cute video of, we had four little, no, I guess there were three little fosters, the most adorable little dogs you ever saw, and we called them the ducklings. And Trisha would be out on a trail, that this would be when they were probably, I don't know, 10 weeks old. They were out in the trail, and Trisha would be walking like this, and they'd be, here's the dog, she's walking. Right, just right after. And It was hard to give up those dogs. They would have been better than you, huh? Aw, no, nobody's better than Aspen. Okay. So so those are different methods. And actually, if you go to my website where it says helpful videos and handouts, there is, I have a long one which is just on all obedience exercises, and I think I have one on loose leash walk or polite walking, which has these in it. And so, you know, they're kind of, try to break them down and describe them appropriately. And I'll send you a link if you want, but essentially they're just on that part of my website. Okay. That good? All right. We're going to go to punishment now, and I'm going to talk about it, even though a lot of people don't think you should do it. It's not really that you don't think you should do it, it's that, where are you? Okay. So we're going to actually talk about, do you want to take a quick break, or are you good for it? Are you skeptical, Pipe? Okay, good. All right, so positive and negative punishment. And I was thinking about this a lot this week because of working with different dogs. So positive punishment is something, and people get this all mixed up, and I completely understand, and I totally forgive everybody for getting it all mixed up, because people think of positive as being good and negative as being bad, and that's the way it is. But in the scientific terminology, positive is something added and negative is something taken away. That's all it is. So positive punishment would be something is added to reduce a behavior. So it can be as subtle as right? That is a corrective word, but the corrective word tells the dog to stop it. So you are actually reducing a behavior. So that is punishment in the kind of really literal sense of the word. So when you talk to purely positive trainers, you ask them if they ever use the word uh-uh, and they'll probably say yes. And of course, they're using part of that quadrant. It does really have a bad reputation, but it shouldn't, because it's part of life. I mean, things punish all the time. So positive punishment can work. It's at what level it works and what you're using it for. It's never my preference to start with punishment, but there are times when it does work. So the criteria for positive punishment is that it has to be big, it has to be appropriate, it has to be memorable, okay? So if you're driving down a freeway and you're going 75 miles an hour in a 65 mile an hour zone, and a police officer pulls you over, what are you gonna get? Ticket, right? That's positive punishment, isn't it? It's doing something to reduce the behavior. It didn't hurt, it's doing something to reduce the behavior. How long will it take you to start speeding again? 10 minutes?
I think that's how long you can.
Pardon?
I think you get 18 months. That you can get.
No, how long is it going to take me after you get the ticket?
The next day.
Maybe 15 minutes later? Maybe as soon as the police officer moves out of sight? Okay, then I'm going to go back up again? Because that can't happen again, right? There's not another police officer right around the corner. Okay, so is that an effective punishment then? No, not at all. Is it effective for increasing the amount of money in Sacramento? Yes, it's fine. But it's not really a good punishment. What would be a good punishment for speeding that would make it so that you never did it again?
You lose your license.
Huh?
You lose your license.
Instantaneously.
Yeah, that would be.
It'd have to be something along the lines of, leave your car, go home.
Yeah.
I'll drive you home, but this car is no longer. Or if the officer blew up the car, that would do it. Right? That way, you would never, once you've got another car, would you ever speed again?
Yeah.
It would so totally work. So, I mean, that might be a little bit on the overkill side. But, you know, what kinds of, you think about that, all right? So what kinds of punishment do people typically use on dogs that may or may not work? So a dog starts jumping up on the counter and the person goes, no, no, no! How long does it take for the dog to jump back up on the counter again? Yeah, as soon as they turn away, or sometimes when before they turn away, dog gets back up there. Because the thing about yelling no at a dog is it's supposed to be positive punishment from our point of view, But from the dog's point of view, it's an empty threat because there's nothing that happens afterwards. People are always saying that, you know, like when you've got a puppy and the puppy bites you and you go, ouch, and it works, how long does it work for? It works while the puppy's very young, sometimes, but why wouldn't it work? It wouldn't work because when the mom does it, what happens after she goes, ow? She bites the puppy. Yeah. So the punishment is not the yelp. The punishment is the bite that comes after the yelp. The punishment is the consequence. So if you just yell and there's no consequence, they'll go, well, I don't care. That's a nice squeaky toy. Boy, if I bite it, it squeaks. You know, that's really cool. So the punishment doesn't work because the punishment isn't punishing at all. So when you're thinking about, you know, what to do about your dog, oh, here's a really good example. I don't tend to use squirt bottles, but lots of people tend to use squirt bottles. So the dog barks something and you squirt the dog, right? And the dog goes, ah, don't like that squirting. Some dogs, Labradors, go, oh, more? But for a lot of dogs, they really don't like it. And people like that because it doesn't feel like it's particularly punishing. It just feels like, you know, it's kind of a correction. And then after a while, they just pick up the water, and the dog goes, ooh, I'm sorry, because they know that the water itself is not the consequence. The spraying is the consequence, right? But this then ends up having some power because it's what? Right, it is a conditioned punisher. This means, it means it's like a clicker for when you're doing clicker training. The clicker is a conditioned reinforcer. If they hear the click, they know that the treat is coming. This is that they see this, they know the spray is coming. The problem is that most people, after the first few times, they don't spray. And when you don't spray, then the conditioned punisher loses a lot of its effect until eventually what will happen is the dog just learns to dance out of its way. So it loses its impact. It's not big and memorable enough after the first time or two. Anybody here ever used a citronellis collar on their dog for barking or anything? Okay. So I have a lot of clients who do. The people I saw yesterday with the little pariah type dog, the village dog, they had Barkbusters come out, and Barkbusters specializes in consequences, in punishers. That's what they do. They have throw chains, they have squirt bottles, so they're into stopping bad behavior with using some kind of a positive punisher. Anyway, these people and other people have used a citronella collar, and what they've said is a citronella collar stops working because the dog learns how to go through all the barks. They bark 15 times, and that empties the citronella container, and they go, done now, I'm good. Yeah, they really do that. So what happens is that the consequence is not, it's really not a big enough punishment, because they can go all the way through 15 of these before they, you know, go it's not going to do anything anymore. And the other reason why citronella collars don't work is because people don't use them. And I think that's true of e-collars as well, you know, like bark collars, is that, first of all, people don't like them, which is a good thing. And they put it on the dog, and it works the first few times, and then after a while, they stop putting it on the dog, and gosh, it doesn't work anymore. So the fact that we're not consistent with it, which is one of the rules here, it really negates whether or not it's going to use. Because if you're going to use something, you need to use it every single time the behavior occurs. Yeah?
But part of the problem is that if you're using it for something like a spray bottle for barking, but then your dog is home by themselves, and then they just continue to bark all the time.
Yes.
Then it's not going to work.
No. because barking is self-reinforcing. So no, it's not going to work.
I'm afraid of, like, if you're just using a spray bottle for something else,
then they're going to be afraid of that.
Really
afraid. There's always fallout.
Yeah.
Always. Punishment always has fallout. So if you yell at your dog, they learn to run away from you. You're breaking the bond of trust. Depending on the dog, you know, some of them are really tough and some of them are not really tough. And I think most shelter dogs are actually not very tough. The dogs that were really tough are the dogs that were bred and used for hunting. literally hunting dogs. Not just Labradors, because there's lots of different kinds of Labradors, but hunting stock, tough as nails. Because guess why? Their owners are tough as nails. So their owners are like, don't do that. And the dog goes, okay. Right? Because that is that so they have bred dogs that can handle all the punishments that they give them. So that's why, you know, you see trainers who go, yeah, all they really need is a good comeuppance. And we've got these dogs that are like, you know, they can't handle any of that at all. So appropriate strength is really, really important. Timing is critical. It has to actually happen when the misbehavior occurs. You can't wait and say, oh, I told him he was a bad dog and I put his nose in it. You know, is that a good punishment? No, the timing sucks. And yet people do that all the time. My, you know, particularly with house training issues, my answer to that usually is, okay, so tell me the last time you went to the bathroom. And they don't remember. Because going to the bathroom is not that big of a deal. So if you, if a dog goes to the bathroom on potty on the floor, and then you come home, you're trying to say to them, remember the last time you went to the bathroom? That's what I'm punishing you for. So if you can get it at that level, and then they go, oh yeah, but he's just trying to get back at me. By peeing? If he really wanted to get back at you, he'd go up on your bed and rip your pillow to shreds or something like that. It should come from the environment. Now, of course, it doesn't all the time, but it's best if it does. So if you had a dog that was an inveterate counter surfer, and you wanted him to not jump on the counter, but you didn't want to keep him in a crate, you didn't want to do confinement with him, you might want to use something like a scat mat, which actually has a little electric pulse that goes through it. And so when they put their paws on the scat mat, they go, ooh, ouch, and they don't do it again.
Well.
It works very well. I actually recommend it all the time. Now, here's some cool things about this. Is it big enough and memorable? You betcha. Absolutely. Does it come from the environment? Yes. You don't have to be there. So often with something like counter surfing, they go, well, they know it's bad because, you know, they don't do it when I'm home. No, they know it's dangerous to do it when you're home. They don't know it's bad. They think you want the counter. Okay, if you want the counter, I'll take it later. You know, so the scat mat is a really good one because of that. It is, the timing is good. It's a passive kind of thing. You don't have to do anything active with it, and it comes from the environment.
Double stick tape works too.
Sometimes for some
dogs.
For
some dogs, not
yes,
testing.
It does not work on the aforesaid Labradors.
It worked on my Doberman. Just putting the tape on the
windowsill. Dobies are
up on the windowsill.
Yeah.
We were afraid he's going to just smash at the window at the mailman. But
Dobies are so just sensitive. Dobies are just like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
I know.
Yeah. they're the most sensitive dogs. Again, should happen every time the behavior occurs. So if you're doing something, if you're yelling at your dog and it works when he's barking in the backyard, but you're in the shower, then your dog should be in the bathroom with you or someplace other than the backyard, because if he barks in the backyard and you're in the shower, you're not going to be able to use your punishment. You get into these rules and you go, this is why I use positive reinforcement. Because it's a lot easier to do positive reinforcement in many cases than it is to use punishment. It should be cued only if appropriate. And what that means is that you don't want to hear, let me see if this is a good one. So you want, oh, I know, just jumping on the counter. So people say off when the dog gets on the counter. That's the cue, right? Do you ever want your dog on the counter? If you want your dog on the counter sometimes, then you should be cueing it. But if you don't want your dog on the counter, then you shouldn't cue it. You should just make it not happen. Now, if that means going over and doing a physical bump off, and saying no, which is kind of an overall, I don't like this, that sort of thing, that's fine. But if you say off, then there's an on. And so he's doing the on at another time. So you try really hard not to cue something that you never want to see happen. And you see this all the time with clients who say no bark. Right? Did you want to have, you have a cue that says bark? If you have a cue that says bark and then you say no bark, then you're good. That's good. But if you don't have a cue that says bark, then no bark is just you barking back at the dog. right? I bark, you bark. I bark, you bark. We all do that. Aspen. Okay. The dog should not enjoy the reinforcement so much that he or she will repeat the misbehavior, nor identify the punishment solely with reinforcement. Okay, so what we get here with like people who, this is a pretty common thing with really naive clients, they pop the leash to stop the dog from doing something, the dog sits and they give him a treat. So the punishment, popping the leash, has now been attached to getting the reinforcement. Yeah? So in order to get that reinforcement, they think they have to do something that causes the pop. Yeah, they're gonna back chain it. So they can't, and so that's not a really good thing at all. So that would be identifying the punishment solely with the reinforcement. Then of course there's the, I don't care what you say about getting on the counters, there's a steak up there. So the reinforcement's worth it. That's very much like if you had a kid, you know, 16-year-old kid, and you told him that he couldn't have the car, and he said, I'm just going to steal it once, you know, because maybe he's being punished for something, and you grounded him, and he goes, but I really want to get out and steal and play with the car a little bit or something, right? So it is, that's enjoying the reinforcement so that they know they're going to go on another timeout that's going to, or another, you know, like grounding that's going to last 3 weeks, but that one joyride is worth it. So if that one thing is worth it, then it's not going to be effective. So now, anybody here ever reprimand their dog? Yeah, of course we all reprimand our dog. What would be a common thing that you might reprimand your dog for? Yeah.
I put my dog on a timeout in a crate, which a lot of people don't like because then it's like their safe space and you're punishing them.
We shall talk about that right now if you want, but go on. So what would it be for?
Just for timeouts. To me, it's like, you know, you put a kid in their room when they're on timeout, they don't hate their room.
They go and know. They probably watch TV or play games. Yeah.
So, I mean, we did, when I was told that, we kind of, we ended up getting another crate because she tore it. Ligament in her knee, but the smaller crate is their timeout crate. We had a
Oh, so you have a litter room. So instead of sending your kid to the bedroom, you send her to the bathroom.
And then, like, you know, our timeout crate was in the family room.
Yeah.
But we did differentiate between the timeout crate and the other crate. Now we just have their crate.
Yeah.
And Alabama, actually, when she's upstairs or when she's downstairs, I actually tell her, you want to go to your room? And she'll stop running, whining. She does.
I don't want to go to my room. I'll be good, Mommy. I'll be good.
That's my crate. Like, I'll tell her, you know, stop doing that. But if she keeps doing it, I'm like, do you want to go to your room? And she's just like, okay.
You know, that's really cute. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? What do you reprimand your dog for?
If, like, one of my dogs tries to get, like, my food.
What's that?
If one of my dogs is to try to get my food, like, I have on the coffee table or something, I just go off and, like, they...
And are they good about backing off? You guys all probably have really good dogs. They won't be like mine. Yeah.
So we have a 9-month-old and an 8-year-old, and the 9-month-old healer sometimes gets very crazy with the older one. And so the older one's just like, oh, you can just see it. So all I have to do with Fiona is go, I'll say like, and all I have to do is this. She's really space sensitive, and I just go, and she backs off.
Okay.
And I don't have to do anything, but because touch is punishment for her, like in some instances. She doesn't want us putting our hands all over, so I just go,
Yeah.
And she just goes right, and she's like, oh. And then sometimes she goes back, so I do, but usually it doesn't take more than 2 times.
Okay, so that's a really good reprimand.
This was about 20 years ago. At a Dalmatian, she would jump on the counter and eat food. And one time she got into all the spaghetti sauce. She got off. You come in and you're looking at her. She's orange. And you're laughing, but you knew. It's like, what did you do? Nothing. You know? But see, back then they'd say, oh, put up mouse traps. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't know as much.
I think what you did is exactly right. You were too late anyway. You had a dog that came out looking orange. And that was really fine. Because most people are really lived, are fairly late on that. If you, anybody here read Bill Keeler's book? Oh, I see, you're all too young. Bill Keeler was wrote his book in the 1980s. And for things like garden, you know, digging in the garden, he would take wrap a bush around the dog, wrap, put a piece of bush in the dog's mouth and wrap tape around it, like, you know, duct tape, and leave him there for, leave it there for like hours and hours and hours. So to me, that's not an effective punishment, although honestly, it probably worked because the dog became terrified of the owners.
Yeah.
So one time our dog Chucky, he was a Malamute, this would be in the 70s, he wrecked all of my, well, he killed all of my guinea pigs, but we didn't punish him for that because he is, you know, he's a Malamute. He said, finally got rid of all those varmints, Mom. What are you, got all those varmints in there for? I had bonsais, and he tore it to shreds, to little tiny shreds, all of my bonsais. And my boyfriend, we were living together, my boyfriend at the time, he had just finished reading Keeler. And so he took a whole bunch of the bonsais and wrapped it around Chucky's head. And I'm like, I can't stand this. This is awful. This is awful. But he left it there for 2 hours. And of course, the dog never went after a bonsai again. But then I never got any more bonsais. So I have no idea whether it would have worked. So, you know. Okay, so the thing is that what people tend to do is for punishing behaviors is we tend to be, that was, the one you did is really good because it's very effective. But what most people do is they do ineffective punishments that are geared at making them feel better, not the dog changes behavior. That is the big reason I do not go for punishment, is because punishment reinforces the punisher. Punishment makes the owner feel like they're doing something. And that is not necessarily a good idea. So you'll see people who have a reactive dog and they're yelling at the dog and popping the dog and everything. And what's it doing? It's amping the dog up more. But is it making the owner feel better? Yeah, to a certain extent, it is making the owner feel better. The other downside of punishment in this kind of case is that when you have a dog that's reactive and then you at least pretend to punish the dog, you're doing it for the sake of the community. Somebody's walking by and they're seeing you and you're telling the dog that you don't like the behavior. So they're seeing, this is because we're a social species, you're trying to show them that you're doing something about it, even though you know darn well it's not going to do a thing to help the behavior. But it's a really normal thing for people to do. So they do that all the time. The other thing that happens is that people just get fed up and they say, I just don't want the dog to do it. You know, you've seen that, right? They've been working on it and they just don't want the dog to do it. And what happens, in my opinion, at that point is they no longer are thinking at all from the dog's point of view. It is now turned into, this is my dog. My dog has to do what I want my dog to do, and I don't care what they feel like. I don't care what they're thinking. And we do see this a lot, you know, that they've actually delineated, or the person has separated himself from the relationship, no longer thinking about the relationship, only thinking now about his own selfish point of view. And that is almost always the worst time to do any kind of punishment. Because if you decide to do any corrections, any kind of punishment whatsoever, you need to be cognizant, you need to be mindful, you really need to know exactly what you're doing and what your looked for consequence is. What is the behavior you want? That's the other thing, another thing that happens with punishment is people forget that you can't just say no to one behavior and have it disappear. It can't go into a void. There has to be another behavior to replace it. And yet what folks do is they just want to get rid of one behavior, but they don't have something else that they want to replace it with. So, you know, that's kind of why I like to talk a lot about this, because especially if you work with the public, these are the things that are going to happen all the time. I mean, thinking about this week's clients, you know, all of them wanted to use some form of punishment for some kind of thing. And so we just sit there. They're always like, what do you mean we're starting sitting down at a table? Well, because we're going to talk about it. I want you to do something about it. no, we're just going to sit and talk about it for a little bit and see what your relationship is like. Oh, my God. It's a shrink. And I can see them thinking it, but by the time we've ended, usually I've got them. You know, they're going to try the stuff that I want them to try. Crates for timeouts. And then we'll take a break. It's fine. You can use a crate. It's not like you're going, I'm going to throw you in there, right? You're not making it a painful place to go. You're just saying, I'm fed up with your behavior. I can't handle you right now. You're going to go into your crate and just relax. Now, are they going to be thinking about what they did wrong? No. Of course not. They're going to be going, I don't really want to be in here. But what'll happen is their heart rate will drop down. They'll get a little bit more relaxed. And if you let them out very calmly after that, they're not likely to repeat the misbehavior. Does negative punishment work? Yes, it does. Negative punishment is what dogs use with other dogs. It is what horses use with other horses. It's what we use with other people. When we don't like what they're doing, we give them the cold shoulder, and by golly, that works better than almost anything else. In fact, many people, me included, would rather have a knockdown, drag-out battle than get this kind of cold, like, well, I don't love you anymore, right? With a human being. So negative punishment, if you can, is almost always the best way to go because it has a really strong effect, and it can be an immediate effect, and you keep your emotional level down, right? Yeah. Until you calm down.
What if it's not me? What if
it's like... Client?
Yeah.
I say these times, it's like, I have to take this stupid driving test. And they say, you know, how fast or how far away do you have to stop your car? I have no spatial... I can't estimate spaces. I actually measured my yard to see how far 45 feet, you know, because I can't tell. Is it 100 yards? What is it? So I just come up with numbers. I'll say, well, for 15 minutes, you know. I very rarely say for more than 15 minutes. People but if it's the owner and you're dealing with an owner, then you say until you have calmed down and you're not angry with your dog anymore. Because the timeout's really for you. I mean, it's partially for the dog, but it's also for you. You need to feel calm. And in the case of maybe two dogs that are playing too roughly, it's time for them to recoup, recover, calm down, and get okay. You know? So I use a tether all the time. All the time. So the little dog that, the village dog, we're going to use a crate for him. I have to talk about his behavior problem because it's really weird. But also a tether because he gets too amped with the 7.5-year-old child and they both get amped together. So we give the little kid the coloring book and we put the dog on a tether and give him a bone. Is that a bad thing? No. But is it a negative punishment in a funny way? It kind of is, isn't it? Because you're taking away the thing he wanted to do the most, which is play, and you're putting him on a tie down and you're saying you can do something else, but you have to calm yourself down. So they've all my clients have been told, oh, you can't use a crate for a time for a punishment. Of course you can. As you say, you send your kids to their room all the time. It's really for both of you. I need time to chill, and you need time to chill. So there's no reason on earth not to use it. Anything else anybody's been told don't use because it might give them, you know, like the heebie-jeebies or something? Yeah.
So I'm taking a puppy class right now, right? And I got the weirdest reaction when I said, I cued watch me. Because I put the treat here to help Dakota, my 15.
Yeah, you're the Lambert.
Yeah, the puppy.
Yeah.
To get him to make eye contact with me because he was just kind of, especially in class, he's looking at everywhere
else. Of course. You're not very interesting. Yeah.
And I was told that he should be doing that naturally, wanting to check in. And I was like, well, how?
I'm going to swear in a minute. I know.
Turned me off. I was like,
which class is this? Is this like a serious class?
It's a beginning puppy class.
Yeah.
It's fine, right?
Yes.
Okay, I was like, he's looking at
yes. Oh my God, yes, it's absolutely fine. You can throw a dance and if he looks at you, that's fine. It doesn't matter. If he looks at you, you're going to say, yes, I really like that. You just looked at me.
Yeah, they wanted me to wait until he looked at me naturally and then treated him. Yeah, but I'm in the middle of this class and I'm like, look.
You can do that at home.
Yeah, I was looking at her.
Do they teach a head snap where you say the dog's name and the head dog looks at you?
I haven't gotten to the head snap.
Do it now.
Okay.
Do it now because that's the watch.
Okay.
Right now. You say the dog's name, they look at you, you go, yes.
Okay.
Now you have a watch. Okay. The only difference between that and watch is watch lasts longer. So you go, what's his name again?
Dakota,
and he looked at you and you go, yes, and then you go, good boy, that's very good, watch, good, 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 okay, you're done.
Okay.
Yeah, but a head snap, I mean, I don't even teach a watch half the time.
You just do the head snap.
I do a head snap.
All right, then I'll just skip
the yeah.
Yeah, because I just...
Do these people know me?
She does.
Okay, just don't tell them that I said anything.
No,
okay, good.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm probably persona non grata in all kinds of places.
I've been told the same thing with walking my dog. If they're looking at you, they're not walking ahead of where they're walking. I'm like, but she's got good focus on
it. It's okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, she's not gonna.
You know, there's a tad on the picayune side, don't you think? Yeah. The fact is she's not biting anybody. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, get your priorities in order here. Yeah.
Years ago with this one for her, and she wanted me to say, instead of saying when they're done sitting to get up, I said okay,
right,
but I should say release, and she's going, no, you need to say release, and I'm saying, but I'm going okay, to me it flows better for me, and I'm the old dog. She says, well, you know, you can teach an old, because it was an old dog.
Yeah.
She says, you can teach an old dog new tricks, but she was talking.
Okay, so here I have actually tried to teach. I tried to teach all three of my dogs different release words, and when I had three dogs. Okay, so one was release, one was okay, and one was that'll do. Those are all the release words for the different dogs. They all released it. All the release words. All of them, because they all knew that that was it. So in the end, if you say the dog's name and the word okay, you have a word, because. What is the difference between moo and moo moo? We know there's a difference. We need moo is a cow's noise and a moo moo is a dress, right? But for a dog, that's just a repeating of the same syllable twice. So when you say, you know, Aspen okay, that is a different sounding word than okay. So you've just, that is your release word. And it's logical, it's reasonable, and I think one of the issues that trainers have is that sometimes they have learned things by rote and they haven't thought about why they're teaching it that way. Because what they'd say is, well, release is a different word from okay, and we say okay in conversation. Yeah, but we don't say Aspen okay. So, and that's all by itself is a word. That's like when you say, you know, sit, good sit. You may be thinking that you're reinforcing the sit, but the dog is hearing two words, sit and good sit, because they don't speak English. They're not parsing the words. And so, you know, it's there's nothing wrong with it. It's just another way to say good. That's all. All right, let's take a break.